I want to thank Miriam for hosting and for her dogged persistence on insisting we have this year. Kol hakavod to her. I've said to the women, I've been so busy past 3 days, I think intentionally so, I haven't had time to process what's going on in this country. And I chose not to think about it, I think, you know. And there are no simple answers. There's no easy answers. There's no pat formula that I didn't want to give anybody. But what we can do is we can learn, and we can study, and we can come closer to this land, and closer to this place, and enhance our bond to it. And that's the strongest response. I was thinking that the thing that I would love to do is build another shul. Someone who doesn't have to be in Harnof, we have to build another shul. You know, because if anybody thinks that the next day that shul wasn't full of people davening, so, you know, it's senseless and it makes no sense. But our response has to be to continue the next day.
They asked the Shabbos to name the son after the
one of them
who was killed because he wasn't buried there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
And they said yes.
Okay, so we're going to do Tol. We're in Parshat Toldot, and I'll allude to what happened to some degree, I don't have great answers for anybody. We're going to start in Toldot Perek Chavav. Yeah, Perek Chavav Pasuk Aleph. For those of you looking on at home. Right. If you need a chumash, you can look on with Miriam or use her phone. It's almost as big as a chumash.
That's true.
Did you need to get a special invitation to buy that? Didn't you have to get an invitation?
They had a one-hour sale that I...
And they shipped it to Israel? Oh, to America.
Yeah.
Oh, right. But it was... Okay. So now we're dealing with Yitzchak Avinu, where Yaakov and Esav are born. We've done this in past years. I'm sure we'll come back to it in years hence. There was a famine in the land. Milvad ha-ra'av ha-rishon asher haya b'imei Avraham. Milvad... Aside from, but it sounds like even more than that, greater than, the famine in the days of Abraham. Vayelech Yitzchak el Avimelech melech plishtim gurara. Yitzchak went to Avimelech, the king of plishtim, gurara, towards gurar. Pasuk bet. Vayera elav Hashem vayomer, al tered mitzrayima, shechon va'aret asher amar elecha. God comes to Yitzchak and says, do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land that I tell you. Now, it says that Yitzchak went to Avimelech in Gerar. But obviously, it's clear from the fact that God appears to him and tells him, don't go to Egypt, that Yitzchak intended
to keep going,
to head to Egypt. The question we have to ask ourselves is, this paragraph, this chapter 26, is fascinating. It's a fascinating, fascinating chapter. It is basically the life of Yitzchak. In some sense, Yitzchak gets chipped out of the Chumash. Why? Abraham, we've got Parshat, the end of Noach, a little bit, teeny bit, but then we have Lech Lechan Vayera, full on Abraham Avinu. Yaakov starts the next parsha. Vayete Yaakov mi'be'er sheva vayelech Harana. The whole of Vayete is Yaakov in Haran. Vayishlach vayeshev, and then on to Yosef in Egypt. Yaakov gets like 2.5-3 parshiot until we get to his sons. What does Yitzchak get? He gets a chapter in Toldot. Seems like something's not fair. Seems like he's a little bit cheated. Right? So what is this, what is the nature of Yitzchak that A, he gets such short shrift, but more importantly, that we have to look carefully about the things that go on in Yitzchak's life. So we're going to do chapter 26 briefly. There's a theme that's a very, very well-known theme that's developed. I'm pretty sure I've never done it in this context, the context of this year, but it has a lot of lessons for us, I guess. And maybe if we think about it, lessons for us today also as well, in this week that we're struggling through. Okay. Why did Yitzchak want to go to Egypt? He went to there was a famine, so why did he want to go to Egypt? The answer is
Abraham.
Oh, very good. Right. This is the theme. That's the answer. It's a very common theme, but this is the answer, and you'll see. We're going to see that it's really in the text itself. Okay, that basically in this chapter, Yitzchak does everything that Abraham did, or not everything, but in some different way. He does it. He puts his own twist on it, but there's a repetition of everything that Abraham did. Comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu to him and says, that's good, but with its own limit, with its own factors. And so that's exactly right. It's clear that Yitzchak wanted to go, and the chapter itself, the verse says, if we look back, it says, Milvad ha-ra'av ha-risham ha-shayah b'imei Abraham. So the Torah itself is already telling us that there's a famine in the land, and this famine is connected to the famine that happened in the time of Abraham Avinu. Why was there a famine in the time of Abraham Avinu? Remember, did anybody know why? I mean, what was the purpose according to Chazal?
The land.
Oh, but according to the Chazal, what was the nature of the famine for? Or what was that, you know?
To test.
It was a test of Abraham. Okay, so why is there a famine now? What's the test? The test of Abraham was?
If he would leave Eretz Israel.
Correct.
Well, he did though. So
he did leave. He was supposed to leave. Would he leave even though God said, go to the land of Canaan? Now there's a famine. Okay, do you still have faith that this is your place even when there's a famine? Yitzchak doesn't have that question, so what's the test?
That he goes,
I think it's a good question.
That he goes where God tells him to go.
Or in this case, what's the test?
Not to go to Egypt.
Right? That's the test. To follow in his father's footsteps, but not to go to Egypt. She's going to Gur Ba'aretz Hazot.
What the king was Nimrod in Egypt. I mean, the king was the power in Egypt, but this is the Plishtim who's in Eretz Israel.
He didn't get that far. It's interesting to know also that Abraham Avinu also went to the Eretz Plishtim. There's a story of Abraham first going to Egypt, and then later on in the text he goes to, so it's like Yitzhak is like reliving Abraham's father's past, but only in brief. Sort of shortly. So let's read on. We'll see in this. Okay. Dwell in this land, Asher Amar Lecha. Gur Ba'aretz Hazot, Pasuk Kimo. Dwell in this land, Ve'eya Imcha Ve'avaracheka. And I will be with you and I will bless you. Ki Lecha Ulezaracha Etenu Kol Ha'artzot Ta'el. Because to you and your children, I will give the Artsot Ta'el, the lands of God, I will give to you. And I will, I will fulfill the oath that I promised to Abraham your father. I will make your children like the stars of the sky. And I'll give them these lands of Ha'el. It could be Ha'el of God, and it could be Ha'elen.
It's a,
how does it say?
These,
okay. V'hit baruchu b'zaracha kol goy ha'aretz, and all the nations of the world be blessed through your children. Why? Because I love you. Because you're great. Because you follow to my commandments. None of that. Why? Ekev asher shama Avraham b'koli. Because Abraham followed in my voice, v'hishmor mishmarti, and he followed my mishmeret. how does he translate it? My guardianship,
my charge,
mitzvotai, my commandments, my statutes, chukotai, v'torotai, my teachings. Okay, it's a fascinating thing. How would you feel if you're Yitzchak and say, Yitzchak, it's all good, right? Don't worry, go to Gerar, do whatever I say, because you'll get everything. Why? Because I love your dad. Right?
It's protected. Like
what?
It's protected.
What's that?
If someone said that to me about I was really close to my dad.
Okay.
I would be proud.
Okay, very good. And I hope that that's the way you looked at it also. But you can look at it another way, which is, yeah, where's Yitzchak's contribution?
The first Israeli protected.
And it's been continuing ever since. Well, family. Okay.
But you learned from your dad, your parents.
What's that?
But he learned how he was being with Hashem.
Absolutely. So, but what's the message here? What's the message that God is telling
to
us?
Of Abraham. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a task in itself to continue what.
Good. We have definitely spoken about this in the past, and it's worth repeating and reinforcing. Abraham Avinu, I always describe him as like the Chabad rabbi of Canaan, right? He would go from, that's exactly what he did. He's a Chabad rabbi because. How did he get people to like Judaism? How did he was in the car of them? The Torah tells exactly. He welcomed them to his house and he fed them. That's exactly, you want to get people in the closest way to a person's heart is through his stomach.
This was Abraham.
Yeah, it was true back then. What do you mean? That in the beginning of Vayera, it's exactly that he did that. It wasn't, there's no mysteries. Three guys show up, he feeds them three cows. And just an incredible amount of food. How could you not like him? Right? And they became close to him and he speaks to them about God. Chabad does that. There's no what?
It's a mashka.
Why not? There's no it's so funny. We all knock it. We all knock it, but then what does every shul in the world now do? Stay for our kiddush, da da da. Have my coffee. Right? Why not? The problem with that is Chabad Judaism is great and important, but it's very flash in the pan. You go from one place to another, you call on the name of God, everyone's so excited. Met this guy, he was so awesome. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Right?
And then to continue it, to learn Torah every day, all day, it's not as
not to learn, I wouldn't even say it that way, to learn Torah every day, all day. To live a, like I was thinking about shul, about what shul is and how, I'm sorry to take it back this, but this, I was thinking about it this morning. Going to shul is, it's not an exciting thing, going to daily minyan. There's no, like, it's a, how should we say this in a nice way? It's a slog. You know what I'm saying? It can be, because it's very hard to be passionate about davening day in and day out. Like, but there's a certain rhythm about going to shul. Like, you know, the fact that Jews were attacked at davening in the morning, to me, it was all about this. Like, I was thinking about it at shul this morning. Not that I'm afraid or anything like that, but it speaks to our persistence. Right, the davening in the morning is just. It's about your daily grind, as it were, and how that daily existence is surrounding the idea of tefillah and Torah, and it's the most unthreatening, unassuming thing in the world. You know what I'm saying? It's the most unflashy thing you could possibly do in Judaism. Go to davening in the morning. There's nobody ever like asks for accolades. You know, I went to minyan at 6:30. I got home at 6:45. At 7:15 or whatever it was. It just is. You know, that's what Yitzchak is all about. Like Avraham Avinu is like, should we move? Push. Avraham Avinu is like, you know, the scholar in residence that comes in and everyone's like, wow, that was the greatest thing in the world. Oh my God. Yitzchak is like davening batikin every day. Yitzchak is dafyomi. You know what I'm saying? Because the Skan resonance is incredible, and you come out very passionate, and then you go home, and like, what, you don't even know what to do with it. But Daf Yomi, even if you can't remember what you learned 3 days ago, the Daf is something that just beats you down in a way and changes your personality day in and day out. Same thing, is absolutely the same thing about learning day in and day out, about Minyan. It is what makes us who we are. You know, the Minyan. Because you could, if you go to Skan resonance once a year and you never go to Minyan, you're not such a great Jew. But if you go to Minyan every day and you never go to a scholar in residence, you're a very, very good Jew. Right? So Abraham establishes something. Abraham creates something. He builds something. But without Yitzchak, if Yitzchak wouldn't be there, if Yitzchak didn't continue what Abraham established and not try to reinvigorate and not try to renew and not try to reinvent what his father did, but just instead say, my dad did all those incredible things, now I've got to stay here and be who I am. Okay? That's what Yitzchak's job is.
Much harder.
Okay. I mean, the Yitzchak, they say, the Abraham is chesed, Yitzchak is, what was Yitzchak's me that is saying?
Gvura.
Right. What's Gvura? Is it who Gibor and Pirkei Avot? HaKoveshet Yitzra. Like, you know, We want our 15 minutes of fame. Yitzchak, like, you know, but Yitzchak's whole deal is to submit, even from the Akedah.
Right.
His whole deal is to submit. That's his whole, the whole theme of Yitzchak's life is to do that. And so this one, he gets one chapter. All he gets is one chapter. Because nobody spends time talking about davening, daily minyan, or daf yomi. Nobody talks about that. It just is. But the things that we don't talk about are the things that make us who we are. The things that give us the foundations for who we are. So that's what, let's go back and look at Rashi for when Hashem says, Al teirid Mitzrayim, I'm going to the Mitzrayim. It's very interesting. Because this speaks about the nature of Yitzchak on Pasuk Bet. Shehaya da'ato leredet Mitzrayim. His idea, his da'at, his intention was to go down to Egypt. Kamo sheyarad aviv b'mei harav. He wants to follow in his father's footsteps. Just as his father went down in the time of the famine. Okay? Mm-hmm. Can you look on my Tracy? You sure?
Okay.
Amar lo, he said to him, Al teired mitzrayimah. Don't go down to Egypt. Sha'ata ola temima. You are a pure ola, a pure sacrifice, a pure offering. Ve'en chutz la'aretz kedai lecha. Chutz la'aretz is not worthy of you. Okay? You're an ola temima. So there's two ways of interpreting it. One, Avraham literally offered him as an ola, as a As a, well, you didn't. He tried. Okay, you were designated as a halacha. Once you designate an animal as hegdesh, as a sacrifice, it's always hegdesh. So you are sanctified Yitzchak. You are special. So you can't leave Eretz Yisrael. But there's something even more than that. You are an ola tamima. You are a sacrifice. Your life is sacrificed for the sake of what your father did. There's a deeper understanding to that. You're an ola tamima, and for that reason, you have to stay where you are. You have to continue. Found it? Very good. You're an ola tamima. Right. Okay. You are a sacrifice in the sense of dedicated to the life that your father created. And we're going to see this over and over again in the context of the rest of the parak. Okay. There's an important Ramban, a very, very important Ramban on the pasuk hey. Look at Rashi for a second. A very, very famous Rashi, and then a Ramban on it. I don't think we've ever done it. Anybody remember doing this Rashi? No? Good, then we can do it again. Okay, look at Rashi for a second. We're actually not going to do it and point it out, because if we have time at the end, we'll come back to it. See Rashi on Shama Abraham Bekoli. Abraham hearkened to my voice on Pasuk K. Kishinisiti Yoto, when I tested him. Vayishmor mishmarti, he guarded my, what is it called?
Charge.
Okay, what in the world does that mean? What is God so happy about Avram for? What did he do? That he guarded my charge, mitzvotai, my commandments, my statutes, and my Torah. What does that mean? What was God so happy that Avram did?
Okay.
Sounds like, right? What would you say? God gave him commandments, God told him to do things, he followed through. Okay? But what is mitzvotai, chukotai, v'torotai? What are those things? What's so great about Abraham? This is what Rashi says. Rashi says, "Vayishmor mishmarti." What does that mean? Gzeirot l'harchaka al azharot shebetorah. Decrees that distance itself against azharot. Against azharot, meaning means lotase. And azhara is a lav. That's the rabbinic term for a lotase. The Torah says, don't be mechalel Shabbat. So came along the sages and created azharot. Very good, muktzah. Okay? Kegon shniot la'arayot. Shniot la'arayot, for all of you who are learning Daf Yomi, right, there's an isur of rishonot. So you can't sleep with your mother, you can't sleep with your grandmother. Can you sleep with your great-grandmother? The Torah doesn't delineate. Came the sages and says, not only can you sleep with your grandmother, you can't sleep with your great-grandmother, and you also can't sleep with your great-grandmother's, I don't know, wife or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Great grandfather's wife. If you were ever interested in learning Yivamot, that is like the basic Shiva basic of Yivamot, and it gets impossibly more complicated from there. Okay? That's a shniyot la'arayot. So the Chazal said, in order to prevent you from even coming close to the possibility of sleeping with your great grandmother, right? So your great grandfather's second wife is also off limits. Although that might be the first one. I don't know. Great grandfather's brother's wife is also off limits.
I think that's good.
What?
I think
that's no, that's the easy one. Your grandfather, that's easy. You want a taste of it?
I know. My husband was telling me about
it. Right. Okay.
Did
he show you the charts?
He did.
Okay. Anyway,
he's
what
do you
think? What?
He missed that yummy today.
Okay. Right. Anyway, so that's, and what is that? So that's one example. Shvut l'Shabbat. Shvut l'Shabbat means, Lord, it means muksa. Zerot de Rabbanan. Correct. You're not allowed to carry, for example, in Rishut HaRabim. But we don't have a Rishut HaRabim. We have what's called a Carmelite, an intermediary kind of outdoor area. But the Rabbanan, the rabbi said, they prohibited us from carrying outside, even in Yad Binyamin, without an Eruv. Even in a Carmelite, because perhaps that would lead us to carry in Rishut HaRabim as well. So there's all kinds of, millions of Isurei D'Rabbanan Azharot. But what's interesting here is, what is Rashi saying?
Abraham
kept it. Correct. Let's go on. Mitzvotai, my commandments. Dvarim sh'ilu lo nichtavu, ru'uyim nitztavot. No. Commandments, literal Torah commandments that are logical, that are sensible. Kagon, gezel, u'shvichat tamim. Like robbery and murder. Anybody would know that murdering innocent people is a terrible thing. Who wouldn't know such a thing? I don't understand what you mean. Okay. Right. Chukotai, what are my statutes? Dvarim she'ayetze hara ve'umot ha'olam mishivin aleihem. Things that the Yetze Hara tries to mishiv, tries to question. Kegon achilat chazir or levishat shanes. Right? What's wrong with pork? It's the other white meat. Tastes great. Okay. Nobody else gets that? When I was growing up, there was an ad campaign to get people to eat pork. They called it the other white meat. What was the first one? A chicken, I think?
I know.
Yeah. Right, whatever. As if trying to tell you that pork is healthy. But you know what I'm saying? You know, people always, it's not any less healthy. People think that pork is not kosher because of like the whole whatever. It's totally not true. It's not kosher because it's not kosher because God said it's not kosher. What's wrong with wearing wool and linen that happen to be woven together? There's nothing inherently bad about it other than the fact that God said, don't do it. Elakzeirat ha-melech, v'chukotav al-avadav. These are the decrees of the king. Torotai, what am I torot? L'havi torah shebal peh. This includes the oral tradition, torah shebal peh, halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. So Rashi, in case you were unclear about what Rashi means, halacha l'moshe mi-sinai, there are some times where the Gemara says, how do we know this rule? It doesn't follow from the verses, it doesn't follow from the sukkim, how do we know it? Halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. No, there's a tradition, God told this to Moses on Sinai. So Abraham kept those two. What's of course the problem?
He wasn't born yet?
Yeah, right. Moshe wasn't born yet, the Torah wasn't given yet. Those are easy. As Harod, the secondary commandments, many of them were decreed by Chazal many thousands of years after Abraham, after Moshe Rabbeinu, after Halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. How is it possible that Abraham kept the entire Torah?
Can you use a Kindle on Shabbat?
What?
Can you use a Kindle on Shabbat?
Can you use a Kindle on Shabbat? So Abraham did not use a Kindle on Shabbat. I can guarantee you. Okay?
To use the Shabbat app.
The Shabbat app, right. Abraham did not. Okay? So the question, of course, is how in the world did Abraham keep all these commandments if they didn't really exist? Rabbana tackles this issue. The others tackle this issue. If we have time at the end, we'll leave that actually. I think it's great fodder for Shabbat table discussion. You can take out the Chumash and read the Rashi's. Ask your kids, what do you think this means that Abraham, that Hashem was so happy with Abraham? What did Abraham say? And they'll say probably what Nori said. And then read Rashi. Rashi clearly, firmly believed that Abraham did keep all the Torah, all the commandments. Today, there's a strong movement, I would say, in the more right-wing community to take this Rashi very literally. It's based on Chazal, on the Midrash, to take it literally. Of course, Abraham, of course, the Abba kept all the commandments. And there's literatures, there's whole books written to try to explain, you know, there's a lot of like what's called pilpul. If you look in the Halacha Sfar, how could Abraham Avinu do this if he did that? You know, and then it goes into the explanation, you know, some deep explanation of, no, it's really not us to turn on the light on Shabbos in this way because we know Abraham did it because, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's extensive literature about this issue. So if we have time at the end, we'll come back to Ramban because he addresses this question. But it's a great question to ask your children. Do you believe that Abraham kept all the mitzvah, that Abraham kept muksa on Shabbos? Yes or no? Why or why not? Is it important that we believe such a thing? And if you don't believe it, what was the Torah trying to command? And if you don't believe that, what was Chazal trying to convey in the Midrash that they taught us? Because the Midrash, even if it's not literally true, it's true. That's something we talk about all the time. The Midrash doesn't have to be technically, factually true, but it's teaching you a larger truth. And Chazal used the literature of Midrash in order to convey a larger truth.
But
what is it that Chazal
true,
trying to convey?
Then why is it important that he kept all the minutiae of halachot, we say conceptually, because I'm a conceptual, I look at things very conceptually, so I get a bit I get a bit irritated, I guess, sometimes.
Yes.
You say, oh, but how can you turn the light on, or whatever.
Right. Whatever that is, it bothers you conceptually to say that he did do it, or that he did.
I accept the fact that he kept the spirit of the halacha.
Oh.
But to me, it really doesn't matter if he made a fire on Shabbat, just say if he had, or something smaller than that, like if he hadn't received.
Wait, does it matter if he accepted made a fire on Shabbat, or doesn't fire on Shabbat is the oraita, or would it matter to you if he? If he didn't turn on his transistor radio on Shabbat, because
right.
That's a Durabanan, and he of course intuited the Durabanan as well. Or you think there's no difference between the two? Because the Torah wasn't given anyway.
Yeah, for me there's such a huge
difference. So then what does Chazal mean according to you? I think you just said it, Tracy.
That he kept the spirit of all the halachot, like Hashem wants us to rest on Shabbat, to be good people, to do chesed. So he did all that, and it doesn't matter that he didn't do the specific halachot.
Okay. Why was it so?
Or maybe the moral laws. See, you know, like not killing, not stealing, you know.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
Very good. But can you jive Rashi with your interpretation?
No.
Like Rashi seems to insist that he kept everything. Can you jive it with that interpretation? Right? I think to me, Rashi and Chazal that quoted this idea, they find it impossible that the great Avot would not have been as meticulous, like that they are our idols in a sense, in terms of idols and with a small I, in terms of models to emulate. So how could it be that I have to do all these minutiae and that they didn't really care about such things? Right? But I'm with you. I don't think it has to be taken literally either. As we'll see, we won't see in Ramban because we're never going to get back to it. Okay. I like to say maybe we'll get back to it, but we never did. Okay, Pasuk Vav. Because I really want to go back to the theme of Yitzchak. Vayesh of Yitzchak begrar. So he says in grar. Vayishalo en shem makom lishto vayomer achotihi. Oh, what do you know? Okay? Right? He says, they ask about his wife, and he says, it's my sister. Ki arei veymor ishti, pen yaharguni en shem makom al bivka. Ki tovat marei. Rivka was beautiful.
He went.
He didn't go to Egypt, but he stayed in grar. He was in the land of Plishtim. Where is the land of Plishtim, Derech Agav? Where is it? Where is it? Where is the land of Plishtim? What? You're living in it. No, this whole course, the whole Shvela region is, I don't know exactly where Gerar is. We can look it up on our smartphones. But it's about here. You know what I'm saying? Farther south, down as you go towards Gaza, right? Those are the lands of the Plishtim. So he went to Gerar. He didn't leave Canaan. He's technically in Canaan. But he's outside of the settled Canaanite areas. And so he gets to Gerar, and Abimelech, the king there, doesn't say anything. Vayomer achotihi. So this, of course, mirrors what Abraham did. Like, look at the textual connections. He said, she's my sister. Abraham said, Sarah's my sister. Why? Abraham said, ki arei pen yaharguni. Abraham was afraid of being killed. And moreover, what else do we know about Sarah? Abraham said about Sarah? You're very beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it lovely to know that all the Imahot were beautiful? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't say that about a lot of people in the text. But okay, ki tovat mareh, she's very beautiful. Vahiki akula yamim. So what happened, by the way? So what happened to Rivka? What happened to Sarah, by the way?
She got kidnapped.
She got taken. What happened to Rivka?
She wasn't.
Nothing. Very interesting. Ki akula sham yamim. Vayashkev Abimelech melech lishin ba'arachalom. Vayar v'hine Yitzchak mitzachekit Rivka ishto. Yeah, very fascinating story. Yitzchak is mitzachek. Unclear what exactly Abimelech saw. There's so many questions here. Why is he peeking in? Yeah, why is he looking in the window? Okay, I don't know. You know, I just happened to notice. Why is Yitzchak? How should we say? Mitzachek. What's the word? I don't even know what the word would be. What does it say?
Sporting.
He's sporting his wife? No, that's not exactly what it means.
It's the same root as Yitzchak.
Litzachek. It means, right. Yitzchak means, so what does it mean?
Laughter.
To cause, to laugh.
Okay.
Right, to bring joy. No, he wasn't mocking her at all. No. Mitzachek in this context means they're engaged in a sort of foreplay in a way, of interspousal.
Making her laugh.
Making her laugh.
Yes.
Joy. Right? You can express a joy. That Yitzchak clearly saw that ain't no sister. You know what I'm saying? It's very clear.
So it was a sexual thing. It wasn't innocent.
It could be intimacy.
What does that mean, innocent? They're husband and wife.
Well, you know what I mean.
No.
Well, it was sexual. It wasn't.
Something that wouldn't have been.
Is that what you're saying?
Any good repartee between husband and wife has a sexual connotation to it. Right, if it's fun, if it's good, if it's exciting,
yeah,
okay. So it doesn't have to mean
connection.
It doesn't right. It doesn't have to mean that he saw them engage in physical activity, although that's the implication. Right, right.
That,
it's a.
Well, from this he.
Can I say it this way?
It
shows you the beautiful power of the biblical language, that one word can mean so many different things, and in this context, we know exactly what it means without having to say what it was. Okay, he was mitzachek. He brought her joy. Okay, so we don't know exactly what it means, but we know what it means. Okay, so he goes. Vayikra Abimelech liYitzchak vayomer ach hine ishtecha hi. Ve'echa amarte achoti hi. One second. Why do you say she was your sister? She's your wife. Vayomer Yitzchak elav Yitzchak ki amarti pen amuta le. I said perhaps you'll kill me for her. Okay, I know. Why is it weird?
I don't know. I don't get it in the Abraham story, and I don't get
it. Why does he put himself in the situation where he has to?
Why does he take his wife with?
Where's he supposed to take his wife?
The
whole family left. These are nomads.
But why does he have to put himself in a situation where he either has to be killed or give his wife?
Well, I think I know exactly why Yitzchak did this. Why did Yitzchak do this? Correct. He sees his.
Abraham was right in doing it, and Sarah was.
Correct. The tone of Abraham when Avimelech comes to him. Remember what Avimelech says to what Abraham says to Avimelech. He answers him, and he says to him, "Do you remember what he says?" It's, let's see where it is in Parsha. One of these Parshas.
Wasn't it a lower level of lying instead of having
a one second. Is he
going? Why? Because we're all brothers.
Here we
sisters.
Are. At this time, when Avimelech says to Avram, I'm in Perek Chaf Pasuk Yud. Vayomer Avimelech Avram, Ma ra'ita ki asita et hadavar hazeh? Sounds very familiar, right? He says, Ech amarta achotihi. Like, how did you do that? It's almost the same story. I said, "Rak en yirat Elohim b'makom hazeh." Yirat Elohim doesn't mean you're not God-fearing people. In this context, it means you don't believe in justice. You have a perverted sense of justice in this place. And yes, you would take my wife and kill me in the process. Why? Because you would never harm a married woman, but a widow, you can do. There's no yirat Elohim. And what does Yitzchak say? It's interesting. Yitzchak says. He sort of says the same thing, but he doesn't go ahead and rebuke in the same way. He doesn't rebuke Avimelech. He doesn't offer such a sharp response. He puts it on himself. It's almost in a sense, what?
So Jewish.
So, you'll kill me for it? I don't know. It's interesting.
But then he puts it on, himself.
I see more as a Yitzchak response than an Abraham response. Abraham's response is, how am I going to change you? Whereas Yitzchak's response is more inward.
Aren't those different shades of Judaism?
What do you mean? I mean,
like everything. Like everything that's happening now.
The model of Abraham and Yitzchak versus Yitzchak could be, but Yitzchak, you see, his life isn't necessarily to go out and promote. He wants to, he's going to it's like a very fine line. He's reliving his father's life, but he can't relive his father's life in the same way because Abraham is out there and I'm in here. You know what I'm saying? Abraham and Yitzchak is found in the house. Avimelech sees him in the house. He doesn't take Rivka out. He doesn't pull her out. The same way, what happened to Sarah? God came through Sarah. He stole Sarah. And then, how does he find out that she's a married woman? Because God appears to him in a dream in the night, and they all suffer some crazy affliction. They all get sick. And so God says, you want to get better? You better go to that guy. And he better pray for you. This does not happen here. Yitzchak stays here, and Avimelech sees Yitzchak in his house.
Well, it wasn't the same danger here?
What?
He did the same thing, but the actual danger wasn't...
Impossible to know.
Could
be, yes.
So, but they both took a huge risk, because, I mean, this could have been an adulterous situation. I don't know, it's hard to...
Uh-huh.
Understand why they did that.
Let's go back to our story. Pasuk Yud, okay. Vayomer Avimelech, ma zot asita lanu, kim'at shachav achar ha'am et ishtecha, ve'heveta aleinu hasham. Somebody almost could have slept with your wife and it would have been a terrible thing. You would have brought sin upon us. It's fascinating. Who do they name him? Look what you almost did to us. Really? Okay, anyway.
The woman have no control.
Or maybe they remember what happened to the king.
No, but they ride it away because it would have been his
fault.
There's
a short memory.
Maybe the king also feels very strongly that he doesn't want to commit adultery and it would have been Yitzchak's fault if he,
took it
from
himself.
What's that?
You're saying you just said that he took it internally, he gave an answer, so then they're blaming.
So then they blame him.
Yeah,
right.
Vayitzav
Avimelech kol ha'am le'emor. So Avimelech said, Hanogea ba'ish hazeh u'bishto mot yumat. Nobody touch him, nobody touch his wife. Good. Vayizra Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi vayimsa ba'shana hi mea she'arim vayivarchehu Hashem. So he planted at that time. There was a famine, but then he planted and it's unclear exactly what it means, but they found mea she'arim. Mea she'arim seems to imply that a hundredfold of produce. So he was very successful, and God blessed him. And then vayigdal ha'ish vayelech, he became great and multiplied. Haloch v'gadel ad ki gadal ma'od. bigger and bigger and bigger. Again, mimicking that of Abraham Avinu. Now remember, Abraham Avinu was wealthy, and he gave all his money to Yitzchak, so that Yitzchak would lose his money in the famine, and then become great again, or he became even greater. It sounds like he became even more wealthy, even more powerful. Okay, and remember, we're not talking, Abimelech is the king of Gerar. You're not talking about the city of Gerar. What was Gerar? It was a clan.
But if it's still in Israel, why didn't they have the famine? Why did he go to that king?
What? The famine was affecting. There was a famine. Right, there was a famine, obviously.
Yeah, but I'm saying before, they had to leave the place to get rest, to get help, somewhere outside of the famine.
Right.
They're going to the same place where there's a famine.
Correct. God said stay, because God told them to stay. I told him not to leave. Okay.
It's interesting, it says Vaygdal Ha'ish.
Why?
It doesn't say Yitzchak.
Yes, it is interesting. I don't know. Very good. I have no answer for you. Okay. Vahila Mikne Son Umikne Bakar, he had sheep and cattle, Va'abuda Rabba, many servants, Vaykan'u Oto Plishtim. Plishtim were jealous. The Palestinians were jealous of him. V'chol ha-be'irot asher chafu avdei avi b'mei Abraham avi. Right? Now again, this connection between Abraham. This is impossible to ignore. Now we're back to the wells of Abraham. Everything he does. So he goes down to Egypt like his father. No, go to Gerar. His father said, she's my sister. He says, she's my sister. His father gets into it with, his father becomes wealthy afterwards. He becomes wealthy afterwards. His father dug wells, exactly the same thing. Be'er shechafu avi b'mei Abraham, sitmum plishtim, v'yim alum afar. Okay, they sitmum, they stop them up. V'yomer b'melech al-Yitzhak, lech me'imanu, ki atzamta mimenu ma'od. Go away. Why? Because you're too great for us, you're too powerful, you have too much money. What does Yitzchak do? What would Abraham have done?
Jump into a fire?
No.
Go on.
Who's more powerful? Remember, Yitzchak has sheep and cattle and money. What does he also? What does money buy? Power. Money buys servants. Money buys warriors. Money buys protection. Should nobody think any differently. It's always been that way. Holech v'gadel ad ma'od. Yitzchak is not in danger. In a sense. We shouldn't.
He doesn't want to cause trouble.
What?
He doesn't want to cause trouble.
Why not?
He wants to be nice. He wants to give them land. He wants to make peace with them. He wants to do everything he can to please them. And they still don't care.
Yeah, they still don't care. Okay? Vayelech misham Yitzchak, vayicham benachal Gerar, vayeshev sham. So he leaves and he goes to Nachal Gerar. He goes from Gerar and he doesn't go that far, I guess.
Why does he leave?
Why does he leave?
Well, why stay? They were there. I'm saying
they were there first. What is it? Kindergarten? You know what I'm saying? Why stay? Because I am rich and powerful and you're not. What? It's your city?
Yeah. Well, you said it wasn't their city and it said it was and he was the king of Gerar. Why cause trouble?
So.
Says it's
let me put it this way. It's not cause trouble. I'm doing well. Things are good. God bless me. You don't like it? Sorry, because your people are jealous. I'm supposed to leave. Because you don't like my presence here. I'm supposed to get out of here. Interesting question, isn't it? Right? So the Midrash does address it. I have a Midrash here on my blue Midrash. The Midrash is a very fascinating thing. Which actually I think has a lot of wisdom. The fact that you don't have to do something doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it anyway. Right? The Midrash says the following. He asked the question, V'lama lo batach she'akadosh baruch hu shlo yitnei negasho bal korcho. Why didn't he have faith that God would protect him? Well, and this is a very galuti question. Why don't you just say no? We're not leaving. You know what I'm saying? This is where I am. You don't like it, you leave. Which is what we say. Shekain Kitiv. It says in Yeshayahu, Lech ami bo b'chadarecha, chavi kimat rega ad ya'avor zam. Okay, go into your chadarecha, into your room. Chavi, hide b'chbot kimat rega, for a moment, ad ya'avor hazam, until the anger passes. This is actually also, I think it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. B'sha'a sha'ata ro'eh, Shasha chatzufa. When you see that the hour is chatzuf, chatzuf not in terms of like chutzpah, but aroused in anger, lo ta'amod kenegda. Don't stand up against it. Elaten la makom. Give the hour space. Hasta'klu bi kaviyachol. Look at me, says God. Kaviyachol, as it were. Shira'iti hashem. We live next to an airport. Okay. Hasta'klu bi kaviyachol. Shira'iti shashach chatzufa ba'avonoch v'netechem. God said, I saw that the hour was chatzuf. It was aroused. It was ripe for punishment because of your sins. I didn't do anything. I gave space. Okay. Therefore, shekol mi sheomed kineged hasha'a nofel biyada. If you stand up against the hour, you fall. You fall in its hands. V'chol mi shenotein makom l'sha'a, hasha'a noten nofel b'pasav. And if you give place for the hour, if you give space, then it falls off. So first of all, this is great advice in general in life. You know, it's great advice in life, in our personal lives. You don't always have to be right, even if you're right. You don't always, if you're in the middle of an argument, you're ready for the argument. Your kid, this happened this week. One of our children, who shall remain nameless, was supposed to wash the dishes, but didn't, because he, she forgot, okay? And went to sleep and left it for us to do. The question is, do you bring it up in the morning before they go to school, or do you not bring it up before you go to school? And your desire as a parent is immediately to say, you didn't wash the dishes, you didn't do it, I thought you were going to do it, it's your responsibility to do, which would immediately have led into a massive argument, because the kid doesn't want to hear it, ruin your morning, ruin his, her morning, right? And it's just not the time. It's not the place. What are you going to accomplish? Is there any chance that the kid is going to wash the dishes and not go to school? No. So what's the point? Like, this is true in so many areas of life. There is a time later on to say, send the kid a text and say, I was disappointed about the fact that you left us the dishes. It wasn't fair. Right? By the way, that's far more effective than the fight. Far more effective, because it does matter to the kid. It matters that you're disappointed, and it's much more effective than the yelling and the screaming, which they then turn off. Same is true of interpersonal relationships, of, you know what I'm saying? People, it took us maybe 15 years in our marriage. You know that phrase, like, never go to sleep angry? It is the worst advice in the world. It is absolutely the worst advice in the world. I tell newlyweds who want to listen. You're angry, go to sleep. Because as the hour gets later, you become more and more illogical and unsensible. You forget what you're fighting about, but you just continue to fight because we can't go to sleep until we get, you know what I'm saying? It's an unreasonable expectation. Go to sleep, talk about it in the morning. I promise you everybody will be happier.
I heard that recently, just like you said, that Duff put just exactly
what
you said.
It's the worst advice in the world. Don't go to sleep. Go to bed. You're angry? It's okay. Don't forget. You're also tired. You're upset. You're exhausted. All things that lead people not to say good things.
But where did it come from?
Isn't it a Jewish sleep?
It's not a Jewish idea. No. Whoever made it? Somebody made it up. Google it. Don't go to bed angry. See who said it. I'm sure it's like, you know, Dr. Mom or something.
In Little Women, it's a female. That's her sister, and she goes to bed angry, and the next day her sister dies. Like the whole thing.
Jane Austen made it up? I believe that. I believe that.
The Little Woman is Lisa Malfatti.
Who is it?
Lisa Malfatti.
See what I know.
She didn't have like a known thing. Like, oh, you should never go to bed angry, and between sisters, and then like when the one almost died. Like, whatever. It's like a lesson.
Worst advice in the world. Worst advice in the world. But the same thing is true. What?
The New Testament.
Don't go to bed angry? Really? That's turn the other cheek you're thinking of. No. Seriously, somebody Google it. See where it's from. Okay. That's why we have Google.
Do it now.
Why not? Okay. But the same thing is true, but in this context, in international relations, right, that there are times where are not ideal for us to start a fight, says Chazal. It doesn't mean that you're right or not right, but it does mean it's not the time. And the example I think of immediately when I think of this is Har HaBayit now. We have every right to daven on Har HaBayit. Every Chaver Knesset has an absolute right to daven on Har HaBayit. And it is an incredible, terrible chutzpah for the Arabs of the world to imply that our presence on Har HaBayit is a justification for them to incite violence against innocent Jews.
Do you have the Shatna Rebbe say,
though? I'm not interested in what the Shatna Rebbe
said. Please.
I'm horrified by what the Shatna Rebbe said. Absolutely horrified.
Read that.
Okay. I'm not even going to. I'm not going to say it. You can Google it if you want. Okay. There you go. You're in the middle of Googling. Who made it up?
It's from the New Testament. Or
oh yeah, this be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. Hooray! Beautiful. Okay. Terrible advice. Okay. Thank you. I didn't know that. There you go.
Okay. It's not the same words exactly.
It could maybe be twisted to say like you should try not to go to sleep angry at other people. Which we do say in Kriyat Shema, like you say like
you don't have to be partial on Matthew. It's
no,
okay.
I'm
it's saying, fine.
Like that
okay.
Maybe where I say like you know.
Anyway, but here we see that. So why did Yitzchak go away? Well, one of the reasons obviously Yitzchak went away is because Yitzchak wasn't about initiating confrontation, and that wasn't his way. But according to the Midrash, the Sha'ah, the hour wasn't right for him to initiate confrontation. Wait for the hour to pass. Like, and I think that that's true. You know, I'm fully in favor of people's right to go into Har Habayit. But there's such a thing as wisdom also. But we got a lot of stuff on our plate. Got a lot of stuff on our plate. The biggest one that the Prime Minister thinks is Iran. It's a huge deal. It's a very important deal. But flaming up of tensions or whatever, what have you, because of Har Habayit, could really make the hour wrong. Might not be the right time. The fact that you're right doesn't always mean that it's the time to make your point and to insist. And that is a very, very important lesson in life. You don't always have to be right at this time. You can say, I'm right, I will push the point, but maybe this isn't the time to do it. And you can never say, then never is the time.
But
you push right
forever.
That's the trick.
We waited long enough.
Yeah. Ideologically, I want to make it clear, I'm incensed at the idea that Jews shouldn't have the right to pray on Har Habayit. Personally, I don't go there. It's not my tzak. But that Jews should have the right to go there.
That's exactly what you're saying. That the father should wait.
It bothers me, but maybe this isn't the time.
Yeah.
Clearly, this isn't the time. And that I think, is an important lesson. It doesn't justify, of course, any response. But is it the time to push it? Perhaps not. And so that's interesting why the Midrash says why Yitzchak did not. Yitzchak's personality was not that. His gvura was to withdraw and to say, this is not something I'm going to push now.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my gosh. That's my grandma.
That's fine. Okay. Okay. Let's be done. We have a couple more minutes. We're going to finish. We're going to go a little bit farther in the pair. But what does Yitzchak do? We're going to figure out how to... So what does he do? He goes somewhere else. And then he goes, he goes and he redigs more wells that they dug in Abraham's time. That the plishtim had then stopped up, had covered. Not only does he redig the wells, he gives them the same name. Dad's well. You know, Dad's well too. Whatever you call them. Okay. Vayachbru avdei Yitzchak banachal. They dug near the wadi. Vayipsu sham b'maim chayim. Vayarivu roei grar im roei Yitzchak. What is this reminiscent of? The shepherds of Grar fought with the shepherds of Yitzchak. Anybody? Loads of shepherds. It's like he's like living his dad's life again, different.
But that was family.
Yeah, it always is. Sunu lanu amayim. Give us the water. Vayikrashim aver eshek. They called it eshek, meaning strife. Ki tashku imam pasuk chaf aleph. Vayichbru be'er acheret. They dug another well. Okay, and they called it the well of hatred. Again he withdraws. He moves away. Okay. And they dug another well. Velo Rabu Alan. They didn't fight about this one. Rechovot. I don't know if it's the same Rechovot, but I have a sense that it. Why not? Right? This is the area of the Plishtim. He keeps moving farther and farther away until he digs a well and he calls it Rechovot. Why? Ki hirchiv Hashem lanu parinu ba'aretz. God has expanded for us and we have parinu. We have been blessed. We have blossomed in this land. So what's fascinating is, what would you say the attribute of Yitzchak on the one hand is repetition of his father. Keep doing it. Keeps doing it. But in order to entrench. Right? If you're going to be non-confrontational, his father was confrontational, but if you're going to be non-confrontational, if you're going to withdraw, in order to entrench something, you also have to have another very, very important attribute, which is the attribute of persistence. Right? One gets the sense, like in the story, Doug Wells stuffed him up. What? Doesn't give up. He keeps doing it and keeps doing it until who gives up?
They.
Why are you going to give up?
Because he won't stop
them. Yeah. At some point they get to... What?
They get fired.
Right.
He's not firing them. Or they go find something else.
Correct. Why? Because at some point... What? Because at some point...
It doesn't say why.
But at some point they get the picture. And the picture is...
I'm not going away.
You're not going to make me angry and I'm not going away. Correct. Both. Like, you're not going to pick a fight and...
Correct. I stand on my right to be here. I'm not going to go away. I will find a well and I will blossom and I will grow. That's the persistence of Yitzchak. And we said, that's the persistence of daily meaning, of shul every day, of our existence here. My pleasure. You can stop up my wells. And we're not on Yitzchak today. We will fight back. As we should. You can stop up my wells. But I'm going to dig another one. And I'm going to dig another one. And that, what's fascinating is that the people who are killed this week, they represent that idea of Jewish persistence. They don't agree with it. They're not from our camp. They're much more Haredi than we are. You know what I'm saying? They don't necessarily send their kids. I don't know if they do or they don't. Their attribute is not an attribute of fighting back. And we learned this week it doesn't matter. The Arabs don't care. They don't care if you fight back. They don't care if you're in East Jerusalem or West Jerusalem. They don't care. It's not interesting to them. They want to kill Jews wherever they are. And I dare say, I don't think they would care if you're in Israel or not. You know, anti-Semitism, wherever it is. Yeah. But what these Jews represented and continue to represent is this strength of Yitzchak, that we're going to be here tomorrow. I'm going to be here the next day. And if chas v'shalom, if you try to do it again, we'll be there the next day again. And you could try to stop up our well, and you could try to stop up our well. We're going to come tomorrow, and we're going to daven, and we're going to learn in that shul. And that's a source of incredible strength, and the strength of Am Yisrael. That's why we're here. That's why we're here, because for thousands of years we said, Yishalayim Recha Barachamim Tashuv. And we believed, V'techazena Einenu B'shuvcha Letzion Barachamim. And we said it over and over again. And we kept saying it, and kept saying it, and kept saying it, until somebody said, it's about time it happened. And now that we're here, we have no intention of going anywhere. That's the model of Yitzchak. That's the strength of Yitzchak that we have till today. Stop here.